Radio Prague News.
The Chinese president is to travel to Prague. Czech counterintelligence say Russian spies are targeting scientific research, and a new target for reducing poverty in the Czech Republic is set. Czech President Miloš Zeman is meeting Friday with his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping on his ongoing trip to China. The Czech head of state let slip to Chinese journalists that he had invited the Chinese president to visit Prague next year and that the invitation had been accepted. He would be the first Chinese president to visit the Czech Republic. Zeman recalled that his first visit to China last year had resulted in a series of breakthrough commercial deals. These have included a deal under which Bank of China opened its first branch in the Czech Republic and the launch of direct flights between Beijing and Prague, which are due to start on September the 23rd. In related news, the Chinese investment group CEFC will buy a 60% majority stake in the Slavia Prague Football Club, the Daily Neovlivny reported on Friday. It cited former Czech minister and current head of the Czech-Chinese Chamber of Commerce, Yaroslav Tvrdík, who mediated the deal. When the deal goes through, the head of the Czech transport company Travel Service, Jiří Šimán, will be left with the remaining 40% in the famous Czech club. It has recently gone many ownership upheavals. Russian spies in the Czech Republic are targeting international research projects in which Czech companies are participating and using Czechs to help them gather information, according to a report on last year's activity by the country's counterintelligence security information service. It said Russia was seeking to gain a competitive advantage by obtaining the know-how stemming from European-funded projects, as well as helping companies plug into the funds on offer from the Czech Republic and EU. The counterintelligence services said that it tried to reduce the number of Russian intelligence officers active in the Czech Republic. It added that Chinese intelligence service also sought to influence Czech state and political structures with the aid of Czechs, including civil servants and politicians. The Czech Republic will aim to cut the number of those threatened by poverty and social exclusion by 100,000 by 2020, Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka announced on Friday. The Czech Prime Minister was speaking at a conference on European social exclusion in Prague. The Czech Republic initially had a target to take 30,000 from the ranks of those facing poverty and exclusion. Falling unemployment and strong growth have allowed that goal to be widened. Sobotka warned, though, that the EU28 as a whole appeared to be on track to missing its target of cutting by 20 million the number of poor and socially excluded in the bloc. The Communist Party of Bohemia and Moravia has called on central government leaders meeting in Prague on Friday to adopt a common position to resist what it described as European Commission pressure over the immigrant crisis. The party attacked Brussels for failing to put forward solutions to the crisis beyond the idea of sharing out migrants between countries. It also said the Czech government, which currently heads the Visegrad group, should have called its meeting earlier so that pressure for immigrant quotas and criticism of central European states, for example from France and Austria, could have been countered earlier. And finally, in football, substitute Milan Škoda was the hero for the Czech national team, with two goals in the last 16 minutes to turn around their European Championship qualifier against Kazakhstan on Thursday night. The Czechs went down at home in the 21st minute with a headed goal from Yuri Logvinenko. A weakened Czech team, missing many key players from injury, looked slow and without many ideas up front. Slavia attacker Škoda was brought on for the second half. The Czechs can now qualify for the finals in France with a win against Latvia on Sunday. I'm Chris Johnston, and that was the news.
Hello, this is Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. Today, the leaders of the Visegrad 4 meet in Prague to discuss a joint position on Europe's ongoing refugee crisis. We'll have a roundup of this week's business news, and a new documentary explores the incredible feats of a legendary Czech mountain climber. All that's coming up in today's programme. The leaders of the Visegrad Four countries, the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Poland and Hungary, are meeting in Prague on Friday to discuss the escalating refugee crisis in Europe. Until now, the Czech Republic and other members have been against EU quotas on the acceptance of migrants. The question is, could that change? Jan Wellinger spoke to political analyst Jiří Peha, who said the stance on quotas hasn't helped.
I think that a lack of solidarity, especially on the part of East European members of the European Union, has divided the European Union in a quite serious way. What the new members of the European Union, that means the post-communist members, do not really understand is that for the West, they're agreeing to the quotas, that means dividing refugees to various countries or sending refugees to various countries on the basis of quotas. It's not so much a real solution of the problem because everyone understands that most of these refugees will in the end wind up in Western Europe anyway, but it's a gesture of solidarity. And I think that West Europeans right now feel that the East of the European Union is not really living up to its commitment.
Do you think that the position by the Eastern European countries is still tenable? Because we have a meeting here between the V4 countries, and they still insist that the quotas should hold.
Well, I think that there may be some movement on the resistance to quotas on part of the East European members or Visegrad countries, simply because so far the refugees that were to be distributed to various countries on the basis of quotas were mainly the refugees coming to Italy and Greece. But Hungary, to some extent, rightly argued that it is taking the main brunt of the refugee movement in Europe because it has, at this point, several hundred thousand refugees on its territory, and that the quotas should apply also to Hungary, to countries such as Hungary. There has been some movement, it seems, on part of the Hungarian prime minister, change of mind, suggests that if the quotas included Hungary, then Hungary may change its view. I think that the Visegrad countries in general will get under a lot of pressure from the West if they keep resisting the quotas, simply because the West doesn't understand how these countries can accept subsidies and a lot of help and money from the European West, and at the same time reject any kind of solidarity with the West in this kind of situation.
Do you think it's alarmist to suggest that European Union, that its sort of identity or its reason, raison d'etre, is threatened? Do you think that this will lead to a significant change in the kind of EU we could have if, say, the Union fails in this test?
Absolutely. I think that crisis is much more about the European Union than about a real refugee crisis. It's, of course, a lot of people who are coming to Europe, but at the same time, at this point, we are dealing with hundreds of thousands or maybe a few million people, which for an entity that has half a billion people on its territory should not be a problem. And if you compare it to the United States, where at this point we have officially about 11 million illegal refugees or immigrants, then Europe should certainly be able to absorb even many more refugees than it has been able to absorb or has discussed during this crisis. So the crisis is really not so much about the refugees, it's more about the European Union. This influx of refugees has tested the European Union severely, and it has sort of uncovered some of the basic structural problems in the European structure.
That was the political analyst Jiří Peha, who was speaking to Jan Wellinger. Now it's Friday, so it's time for a roundup of the main business stories of the week. And for that, I'm joined by Ruth Frankova.
The average monthly salary in the Czech Republic in the second quarter of 2015 rose by 3.4% to 26,278 crowns, compared to the same period last year, according to the figures released by the Czech Statistical Office on Friday. Accounting for inflation, real growth was 2.7%. Average monthly pay stood at 26,287 crowns, over 970 euros at the end of August. The results exceeded expectations of analysts who anticipated a wage hike of about 2%.
The European Commission has approved the Czech government's plan to extend the support of the so-called first-generation biofuels based on food or animal crops, the Daily Hospodářské noviny reported this week. The draft legislation which extends the fuel support has been repeatedly debated in the lower house of parliament since April this year. The legislation has come under fire from opposition deputies who claim that it benefits the agrochemical group Agrofert, owned by Finance Minister Andrej Babiš. The extended tax benefits, which should be in place until 2020, should amount to 9 billion crowns.
Israeli cybersecurity firm CyberGym plans to build its first commercial training arena in the Czech Republic. Customers will be able to acquire defensives against even the most sophisticated cyber attacks, the company says. It will mainly serve institutions using key infrastructure for which a potential cyber attack could impact the whole of society, such as banking, energy and telecommunication providers. The arena is set to open in Žitka near Prague in February next year. According to CyberGym's head, Ofir Hasson, the Czech Republic was selected because it had some of the best IT experts in the world and is one of the first countries to adopt law on cybernetic security.
The country's largest bank, Česká spořitelna, plans to launch a prepaid debit card for children in mid-September, the Daily E15 reported on Friday. The BEEP project consists of a prepaid MasterCard debit card on which parents load money and monitor their child's transactions with a mobile banking application. It's intended for children from the age of 10 upwards. Similar schemes have recently made their way on the Czech market, including ČSOB's Cool Karta or Napka by Rockaway.
Czech company Elmich Group has opened a new household utensils manufacturing plant in Vietnam. The company invested over 430 million crowns in the project. The new plant in northern Hanam province currently employs around 100 people and plans to create another 200 workplaces in the future. Some 80% of the factory's products are to be exported to European and Asian markets. Overall investments of the Czech Republic in Vietnam exceed $100 million to date.
Thank you for that, Ruth Frankova. The great Czech mountain climber Radek Jaroš is the subject of a new documentary film. And it's the subject of this week's edition of The Arts by Jan Wellinger.
There are few sports as physically and psychologically demanding as mountaineering, requiring remarkable commitment, readiness, and eventually experience. In mountain climbing, Radek Jaroš is a legend, the only Czech who has completed the crown of the Himalayas. That means conquering all 14 of the world's tallest peaks, all above 8,000 meters. In 1998, he began with Mount Everest, and in 2014, successfully completed the cycle with K2. Jaroš ascended all of these mountains without the use of supplemental oxygen. Only 14 people before him have ever done the same. A new film just out in Czech cinemas, Cesta vzhůru, Climbing Higher, captures moments from those final climbs and the journey to get there. Along the way, it follows two major threads: the call of the sport, so to speak, or the mountains, and the pull of normal, day-to-day life. Looking back on his achievement, mountaineer Radek Jaroš said this.
My Himalayan odyssey lasted 20 years, beginning with my original unsuccessful attempts to climb to K2 in 1994. K2 stands out among the 14 peaks because I had to travel there 5 times before I reached the summit. In that sense, it may seem it was the hardest, but the last expedition, which was successful, was paradoxically the easiest expedition I ever had. In terms of sheer technical skill, when 4 of us climbed the south face of Shishapangma, alpine style, I would say that that was the toughest. not least when Petr Mášek and I, on the last 300 metres, picked our own route or variant to reach the peak.
On K2, Jaroš experienced remarkably good form, he said, and he joked that that perhaps had hurt the film. Climbing with ease perhaps robbed it of moments of greater dramatic tension or dramatic turns. But many of those had also been previously filmed at Annapurna, where Jaroš suffered severe frostbite. Eventually, this led to 7 operations and a long period of recovery. The film's director, David Čalek, says that because Jaroš always filmed much of his expeditions, there were many hours to work with, both archive material as well as footage filmed by himself and his crew, who themselves climbed to 6,000 meters. No mean feat.
The film is 100 minutes, which is long for a documentary of this kind. But we had, including Radek's material, around 300 hours of material to work with, so it was hard to cut it down to the final length. One could have been about Radek as a person, another about how he got to the moment when he could again tackle K2, and the last just about K2, so we had to reel it in. As a result, the film focuses most on the last 2 climbs, with an introduction from the archive material where you can see how climbing and mountaineering fashion has changed since the 1980s. Then we turn to Radek's long recovery.
According to mountaineer Jaroš, it was not easy to watch some of the archived footage of him waking up in pain after one of his operations. And he drew an interesting parallel between the man in the hospital and later the successful climber on that final mountain peak.
Takový ty záběry na začátku, kdy se probírám z narkózy a strašně tam teda trpím, to jsem...
My reaction when I saw the footage of me waking up from anesthesia in terrible pain was to laugh. But the moment really got to my girlfriend, who cried, and then it got to me too. But then there are shots at the end of the movie when I'm lying in the tent after having summited on K2. Before, it's true that I had excellent form and was like a live wire. But the shots at the end of the film show a man who is completely wiped out. I have to say I felt quite sorry for him. The person at the beginning and at the end after returning from K2 are one and the same. Both are at rock bottom.
For obvious reasons, the film technically wasn't easy to shoot, not least because the film crew headed by Čalek itself had to climb and work at 6,000 meters. Čalek says he hopes that at least some of that sweat, many of the challenges, made it successfully onto the screen.
Rozhodně podívat se tam nahoru, podívat se tam před Radkem.
To get that high up ahead of Radek was a very interesting experience, almost beyond description. I hope that something of the exertion and fatigue and difficulty breathing and slow steps at this height and up are apparent from watching the film. For me, it was a beginning, and after that we focused in putting it all together in the editing room.
And asked what he hopes viewers will most take away from climbing higher or Cesta z Hůru, mountaineer Radek Jaroš said this.
Nevím, jestli si to z toho odnesou, ale rozhodně na jednu stranu samozřejmě je to extrém.
I can't know for certain what viewers will take away from the film, but certainly, on the one hand, it's about extremes. Only 15 people in the world have climbed all 14 of the tallest peaks, so that's something. On the other hand, there is a certain motivation. While really climbing higher requires one to take a certain path, including sacrifices in relationships, grappling with injury and remaining in form, the mountains are for everyone to enjoy. They are all beautiful and you don't have to climb an 8,000-metre peak. You can visit Kokronose or Zizeski or Jesenski Mountains, and that can be the peak for some. So, if anything, I hope the film inspires people to get outdoors and spend more time in nature.
Takže já doufám, že to bude motivace pro lidi, aby se pohybovali v přírodě.
And if you think after all this that the climber will kick back now and get a little rest, you're mistaken. Radek Jaroš's next challenge, he said, was to tackle the so-called 7 summits. That means climbing the highest mountain on each continent.
Láká mě to podat nějak jinak než horolezecký cíl, protože co si budeme říkat, jsou tam...
I would like to tackle the 7 summits project a little differently. Some of the mountains aren't as difficult to climb, although one of the first, Denali in Alaska, is hard and no work in the park. We would like for it to be more than just about reaching the peak. Sometimes the journey is just as important.
Mountaineer Radek Jaroš ending this week's edition of The Arts by Jan Wellinger. And if you have any comments about today's program here on Radio Prague, please do share them with us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook or via Twitter. But that's all for now, folks. From me, Ian Willoughby, thank you very much for listening to Radio Prague, and goodbye.